Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Meet the Author on Blog Talk Radio. This is Denny Griffin, and for the next half hour, I will be your host. And our call-in number, if you'd like to reach me or my guest this evening, is 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. And I'm pleased to have with me tonight author Teal James Glenn. TJ is a native of Brooklyn, although he's traveled the world for 30 years as a stuntman, flight choreographer, swordmaster, jouster, book illustrator, storyteller, bodyguard, and actor. He was head instructor at the Hollywood Stunts Professional Stunt Training Center in New York and teaches stage sword privately. He's a veteran of 47 Renaissance fairs, scores of films such as Lord of the G-Strings and Jersey Justice, and hundreds of TV appearances. Currently, he stars as the masked cage fighter Vega in the international web series Street Fighter, The Later Years, and in the forthcoming TV sequel Street Fighter Reunion, and plays the claymore-wielding Scottish pirate Hamish in the forthcoming pirate feature film The High Seas. He also has a number of books published, four in his Altiva fantasy saga, Tales of a Warrior Priest, Death at Dragon Throat, The Daemonhold Curse, and Sister Warrior. He also authored the mystery A Hex of Shadows and the science fiction Vision Quest Factor. He also has nonfiction books on the craft Them's Fightin' Words, A Writer's Guide to Writing Fight Scenes. Boy, that was quite an introduction. TJ, welcome to Meet the Author.
I hope there's enough time for me to talk. It's nice to meet you, Denny.
Well, thank you.
I look good on paper, except to my banker, you know.
Absolutely. What I'd like to do, TJ, is talk. Well, there's several things I'd like to talk about. Of course, this is primarily a writing show, Meet the Author. And some of the people who will listen to us are listening now and will listen to or play back the broadcast as a podcast, our budding authors. So I always try to get a little information for aspiring writers from people who have been there, done that. So we'll get into some of that stuff. And, of course, I want to talk about your current book, Knight Errant, Death and Life at the Fair, and that's spelled F-A-I-R-E.
Yep.
It's a mystery set at a modern-day Renaissance fair. And I also want to get into some of your other activities, such as your stuntman and swordmaster and jouster and all this stuff. Would you like to talk, begin by telling us about your current book?
Well, Knight Errant, is probably my most autobiographical book. It is a book that follows the adventures of a fight choreographer whose best friend is murdered. He finds the body, and at first they think it's an accident, but they determine it's murder, and he eventually tracks down the killer while trying to put on a Renaissance festival, so you get the behind the scenes. It's sort of, in that sense, it's like a Dick Francis book. The world of the fair is sort of a character, the way it's put on and the people you meet through it. But it is based on a good friend of mine was killed. I did find the body. And in fact, those were the first chapters I wrote almost as a journal. And then fit it into the story when it fully presented itself. But it was a hard book to write because it's about 75% really happened incidents. I just will never tell what the 25% is. You know.
Okay. So writing this brought back a lot of memories. Then.
I mean, I wrote the death scene of the character. And then I couldn't touch the book for about 2 years afterwards. It took me that long to come back to you know, deal with the process. But one of the reasons I wrote it is whenever you read a detective book, with very few exceptions, like with Robert Parker and one of the Spencer books, when Susan Silverman goes away, you feel her absence for the three books that she's gone. But when most detective books, when they killed Joey, you make mention that, you know, Joey was a buddy, but you never feel it through the rest of the book. And it was important to me that the audience felt the lack of the person. I mean, everybody here in New York, when we look up at the sky, we still see the hole in the sky where the World Trade Center used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a friend who passes, you still see the chair empty when they're not in it. And that's something I wanted to convey in the book, not just the mystery, but the essence of the person that I base the character Tom on, who is, I mean, I have that guy's photo sitting here on the desk looking at me, you know, whenever I write.
About how long then, including this two-year hiatus, was this book in progress?
It was about, with that two-year hiatus added, it was probably about 3 years, four years in progress, say, just about four, because it was a start and stop process, and once I got going on it, though, it gained its own momentum. But normally, I mean, now I've reached a point where my books are much faster as I've tried to turn my eye toward it more as a craft. But,
sure.
You know, my earlier books took longer because I really was feeling my way along. And, you know.
You now write various things, various genres. Well, what is your favorite? Do you have a favorite? Do you like it all?
I have to say whatever I'm writing at the moment is the favorite, because for me, since I approach it from character, as long as I can connect with the character, it doesn't matter to me whether they're having fun, being afraid, or being adventurous. You know, it's how I connect with the characters. In fact, I just turned in a book called Queen Morgana and the Wren Fairies, which is an urban fantasy, but some of the characters from Knight Errant actually show up in it, even though it's a completely different genre. It's a light comedy, you know, fairy story, but it takes place partly at a Renaissance fair. So, I sort of said, oh, you know, they'd be wandering in the background, so I have them wandering in the background. You know, to me, I didn't realize myself that I kept starting to jump genres until I sat down and said, oh, I've got mysteries and science fiction and adventure and fantasy, and oh, I guess they are different genres. Because it's, if the characters are the most important thing, once you have that, I think you could put them in any circumstance and essentially they'll work.
You're awful busy, I mean, with all the other things you have in the fire. I mean, writing obviously takes time. And then you do all these other things, too. Do you have trouble getting enough hours in the day or days in the week?
Fortunately, the stunt work and the acting, or unfortunately, I guess, maybe for my bank account, are sporadic. So that, you know, when I'm working on a job, I might be working on it for 2 days very intensely and then not have a job again choreographing fights for, you know, 2 weeks. So, you know, writing has become my day job. And as I go along, the other work, I did some security work this past weekend. And so for 2 days, I couldn't get near the computer, but I actually wrote the chapter, the opening chapter of my next novel while I was standing guard duty, and things were slow. So I had a notebook with me. So, you know, the writing goes on even when I'm doing other stuff. And it's actually getting easier. I think it's like anything else. The more you do it, the easier it becomes. You start to develop strategies to make it work. They used to say Arthur Conan Doyle used to stand on the line for theater and he'd have a notebook and he'd be writing stories, you know, as they were going into the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, once you get rolling, you know, I think unless you want to be terribly artsy-fartsy and you can only do it in a north-facing room between 4 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the evening, I think you write when you can, wherever you can.
You know, and I really hate to say this, but I do have a confession to make.
Confession's good for the soul.
I do some of my sometimes I'll get stuck. I'll be in a certain chapter, a certain scene, and I don't quite know how to get out of it. I don't want to use the word writer's block, but I just get hung up in a particular area. And I find that heaven help me, that when I'm in church sometimes, if there's a really boring sermon, I'll end up figuring out, maybe it's divine intervention, I don't know what it is, but while
I would take
wonders,
that. I think that ultimately, not to put too fine a spiritual point on it, but I think that storytellers are, you know, the Indians used to call them, you know, gifted. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, we get a direct line. And I meditate. I think it comes where it comes. Sometimes it'll come while I'm telling the story to somebody because I haven't figured it out. And as I tell it, I suddenly know what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll call up a friend and I'll bore them and go, I've got him in the back of the warehouse, but I can't figure out how to get him out. And it'll suddenly come to me while I'm spewing. So, you know.
Before I forget this, just a minute or two, I'll ask TJ to give out any contact information or website, how to purchase his books and so forth. So if anybody is interested, if you grab a paper and pencil in just a minute, I'll ask TJ to give that information out. Now, I want to take advantage of your being with me this evening, because I've never had a stuntman as a guest before. What does a stuntman actually, how do they do it? They obviously, a stuntman has to do things that the regular, the lead actor or what have you wouldn't do. But could you give us a little more about what
essentially,
the stuntman are?
Essentially, the general definition is a stunt is anything that could conceivably be dangerous or requires specialized skill.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be anything from, you know, tripping down a step to falling on your butt off a chair to a fight to, you know, the stuff you think of, jumping off buildings and getting set on fire and falling downstairs. And the thing is, a stuntman is not a daredevil. A daredevil does something and hopes, even if he does some planning, he just hopes it goes well. But a stuntman plans for it to go well.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't do it if he thinks there's a chance of danger. Now, there always is, but we try to bring the Murphy factor to as small a fraction as possible. Because, you know, there are old stuntmen and bold stuntmen, but there are no old, bold stuntmen. And,
well put.
You know, I mean, one of the reasons that I always wrote. I wrote for myself, and I wrote for many, many years. When my daughter was born, I actually put Knight Errant in a drawer. I had finished it the week before and then didn't pull it out for many years. As I got older, I said, you know, at some point I'll be able to fall down the stairs but not get up again. So I really need to think about what's the next arc for the career.
Mm-hmm.
And the writing came back to me very strongly, and now it's, you know, a competing love. It's, am I going to be Raymond Chandler or am I going to be Errol Flynn? It's, you know, it's back and forth between the two.
Did you ever get injured doing stunts? No.
I have been injured in rehearsals, and I have been injured in training. The only time I've actually physically required a doctor in 27 years I've been doing this, or 28 years I've been doing this, was I did a movie called Band, which has never been released, which is, you know, funny. And I doubled an actor doing a stair fall down, you know, the metal fire escape stairs outside of a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go down three stories. And everything went perfectly, because stair falls are something of a specialty of mine. But it went so well, I got a little more velocity than I wanted to. And on the last four steps, I bounced up and my calf slid along the top rail. I put the actor in, showed him how to do the fall, went back to the dressing room to take off my pads, and noticed that the back of my calf pad was red. And I looked in and I could see the bone. And what had happened is, like when you get hit with a baseball bat, the skin split from being smacked, but it went all the way to the bone. So went to the hospital. They sewed me up, and I was on the movie the next day on canes, and I finished the picture. Because basically, you can't be a whiny stuntman. You don't have much of a career if you go, oh, it hurts. But that's the only time, knock lots of wood, that I or anybody on any picture I've run or show that I've run has ever needed a doctor. But you know, I've hurt myself training in martial arts class. That's where you get hurt. In rehearsals, I've slipped on wet floors and stuff like that, but never actually, because basically by the time you get to the picture, you know, you're focused 100% on making sure it's safe for you and everybody around you. In rehearsals, when you're actually thinking about how it's going to look later and factoring in the new costume pieces and all of that, and so that's actually when there's more things that can go wrong. But ultimately, I always tell people my job description is everything they told you not to do during recess in second grade. I run with sharp objects, I hit people, and I yell. And then they pay me for it. It's great.
TJ, I get a bizarre incoming number on my switchboard here. I don't know if it's an actual call or not, but let me try it. And if it is, we'll see what they want, okay? Hold on.
All right.
But ultimately, are you there, caller?
Yes, I am.
Yes, sir. Please go ahead with your question or comment.
TJ.
Yes.
This is Tim, Henry VIII.
Hey, how you doing, Tim?
Okay. Very good.
He was my Henry VIII at a Renaissance fair this past June, and an excellent swordsman himself.
Thank
well,
you, sir.
Welcome.
High prices from the master. Got a question for you. Are you coming to this year's Mayfair?
As far as I know. I guess this is the world's just heard it, as far as I know. I haven't heard any of the details yet, but we'll talk about that at another point.
Okay, that's excellent. I'm glad to hear you on the radio. Eileen just told me about it.
That's great. But I love the fact that it's a bizarre incoming number, though. Tim is an actor and a fighter that played Henry VIII at the Hudson Valley Mayfair this last June, where my daughter was my storytelling partner, and I choreographed the fights for it. But he's an excellent swordsman, actually, and also did the cloisters this year too.
Yes. Michelle will be going in for her operation on the 24th, and hopefully she'll be able to fight this coming season.
Well, I shall keep her in my prayers, as I hope everybody listening does.
Yes. Well, we hope for a speedy recovery. So, well, good luck for the rest of your show, and you have my email address, right?
Yes, but you probably shouldn't put it out over the air. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
You know, before we move on, do you want to take a second and give out any contact information or website information?
Sure. You can get most of my books. The name is Teal James Glenn, T-E-E-L, James, G-L-E-N-N, at epressonline.com, which publishes a number of them, Knight Errant specifically. But you can get them at amazon.com, or the electronic versions you can get at fictionwise.com. Because the books are published both electronically and in print versions. And my website is theurbanswashbuckler.com.
All one word?
Yes, all one word, theurbanswashbuckler.com.
It looks like we had another caller. TJ, hold on a second. Yes, caller.
Hello, TJ. This is Janice in Sugar Land, Texas.
Hello, Janice.
How are you?
Okay.
I wanted to tell you that I read Knight Errant, and it's one of the better books I've ever read. You have a talent for setting up scenes and making the reader being able to picture in their minds exactly what's going on. I think
you're
wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I try. I mean, I was a painter, and so I really do visualize everything. I know that a lot of authors go for pure emotion, but I like to mix that with very heavy visual images, because I really do think that Even when we're reading, we're a very visual species, and we see things, and we need to see them. So thank you very much, Janice.
You're welcome. I just wanted to let you know that when I read that book, and I read a lot, I stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning because I had to know how it ended. I couldn't put it down.
Well, thank you.
And it was not a disappointment. It was worth the lost hours of sleep.
Well, thank you. I hope to ruin the sleep of much of America.
I hope you do. Good luck
to
you, TJ.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, ma'am.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Well, that's the kind of calls you like to get, isn't it?
Yeah. I got to find out how to pay for those kind of compliments.
Listen, I want to get back. The time's going quickly. I want to get back to writing, but I do, again, want to take advantage of your presence to ask you about sword fighting. I've often wondered, I'm talking now back, you mentioned Errol Flynn a while ago. I remember Errol Flynn in the old Robin Hood movie.
Mm-hmm.
Willoughby de Havilland was in it. And I used to think then, do these swords really weigh as much as, you know, I mean, these
well,
guys
the ones that
very
he, the,
good with them.
The swords that he used in that, and I studied under Paddy Crean, who was Errol Flynn's stunt double for Master of Ballantry, Cross Swords, and the unfinished William Tell movie. But the swords that they used for Robin Hood were would have been equivalent to light archer swords. They're very light. A lot of times they would make the swords for the movies out of aircraft aluminum, at least later on they did.
Oh,
and,
really?
Okay. Yeah, because real swords are not made to do the kind of stuff they were doing in that movie. They were doing saber fighting maneuvers, which hadn't been invented for another 4 or 5 centuries. I mean, when I'm choreographing fights, it's got to be safe. It's got to tell the story. And it's got to have something more. It has to be exciting. It has to feel right. So the choreographer for that, Fred Cavins, he gave it, you know, modern moves because he felt that that's what gave it that, you know, joie de vivre that looks so exciting. It is one of the best sword fights still. And it is amazing on a real movie screen. That Technicolor, it's more science fiction than Star Wars. It's the colors are so bright. But those swords, they're not accurate moves, but it's one of those movies where you completely forgive them not being period accurate because it looks so good you don't really care. You know?
Yeah, you like it regardless, right?
Yeah. I mean, most swords, remember, the men who used them trained every day with them. So most actors who get the swords can't really handle the real weight because they haven't had them for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get exceptions. You have actors like Viggo Mortensen who, you know, slept with his sword literally so that he really felt it and trained very hard every day, or Adrian Paul from the Highlander series. But most actors don't have that much time to devote to the sword, which is why they bring in, you know, experts or ringers as doubles for them or to be the bad guys opposite them. Because it is a skill. It's a very specific skill. There are some stuntmen who have basic training in it but are not really swordsmen. And then there are others who are considered swordsmen who also do other stunts. You know.
Now, choreographing fights, in addition to sword fighting, you do fist fights type?
Oh, yeah, every kind of fight. Knife fighting, fist fights, swords in most cultures. I mean, I really am a fight junkie. So, I mean, I have tapes and tapes of the stuff. I've studied every style. Anytime I get together with anybody who has a different skill than me, we pull out the fake weapons and start to beat the snot out of each other to practice. I mean, you know, it's very addictive. I mean, I try to get some of that in Knight Errant, in talking about how it's choreographed and how the characters approach it. Because there really is a culture of we who do the sword in this country that it is almost a separate subculture of people who live by the sword. The gentleman who called in before, Tim, is, the sword's a very big part of his life. Other fight choreographers I know and other actors that, they go through life from Ren Fairs to Shakespeare to even finding movies, and the sword follows them. And for me, that was the first weapon, and everything else came after it. All of the unarmed stuff followed the sword.
TJ, let us take another call here. Hold on just a sec. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
What?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, TJ. How are you?
Okay.
I heard my name mentioned a little while ago. This is Eileen.
Oh, hello, Eileen. How are you? This is becoming old home week. Okay.
So good to hear you. I have a question about your writing, about characters.
Yes. Yes.
When you're creating characters, if they're loosely based on living people, their names or their personalities, do you ask their permission to use them?
Generally not, because what I do is I take a sketch. I might take a name and, like, anagramize it,
mm-hmm.
or I might take a physical attribute, but I'm never really doing that character. It's why I don't say Knight Errant is biographical or autobiographical.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a Roman a clef. It's within Knight Errant, there are actually, like, the people who make up the Renaissance Fair staff are actually from four different Renaissance Fairs I worked at and didn't work with each other often. So I will make composites. I mean, sometimes I'll steal a name. I saw a name on a sign once of a lawyer somewhere, and I thought, what a great name, and I ended up using him as a manager's name. I have no idea what the guy looks like or who he is, but he had a great-sounding name. So I try not to actually do a version of the person. I will take
mm-hmm.
an attribute. Although I did, in my my book, my third book in The Exceptionals, which is a science fiction series from Whiskey Creek that I've written, I actually have a character named Jester, and I knew someone in the New York Jedi who used the character name Jester, and some of the physical attributes are based. So I actually dedicated the book to her,
mm-hmm.
but the character in the story is nothing like her, except it has some of the feistiness and probably physically is a little bit, but the coloring's different. But it's just, it was such a cool name. I said, I got to use this for a character someday. So, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, I might even create a character named Uptown Wench someday. I don't know.
I hope you do.
I try not to be so specific that someone could point and say, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really don't want to offend anybody. I'm telling stories. Even if the stories have some basis in fact, they're
mm-hmm.
characters within the story. They're not the person. I try to be really clear about that. Otherwise, I'd go to jail for the characters based on me.
Well, actually, when reading Knight Errant and also Damon Hold Curse, I was just envisioning you the whole time that I was reading it as your character. Absolutely.
Okay.
In a positive way, in a very positive way.
Yeah, well, certainly Eric Knight in Knight Errant is very much me
mm-hmm.
in a lot of it, in me in different parts of my life. But then if you're telling a first-person story, it should have that kind of immediacy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But we should probably get back to Denny. Hi, Denny. How you doing?
I'm enjoying listening here. Eileen,
well,
thank you very much
TJ
for calling in.
It's a pleasure to read.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
TJ, I hate to say this, but I don't know where the time went, but we're down to our final few seconds here. What I'd like to do, if we could, is just finish up back to the writing again for a minute. If you were asked by an up-and-coming or aspiring author for two tips when they're entering the writing business, what two things would you tell them?
Join online writers groups like EPIC, which is the electronically published internet community, or one of the other writers groups where I lurk on the lists and listen to other writers, people like Donna Sunblatt and Nikki Lay and June Dahl, who know about promotion and know about writing and know how to make the two non-exclusive, because while it is an art, it's also a craft. So basically, you know, that's part of doing the research. The other thing would do the research.
Mm-hmm.
Check on the publishers you want to write for. Really read the material that they put out. I mean, that's all the business part of it. In terms of the art, just write what you love, because it's going to be you in a room by yourself for so many hours. If you don't love it, you're going to make your own life miserable. You know?
Excellent, excellent advice. And I always preach, maybe isn't the word, I always cite the same things you did. TJ, our time is up. Thanks so much for being on. And I'm sorry I got sidetracked from your book. I did want to take advantage of your other skills.
They all fit together. They show up in all my books, so why not?
Listen, please, now you have another book you just submitted. When that comes out, why don't you get a hold of me and we'll do this again, and maybe we'll expand the time frame a little bit.
All right, well, actually, I've got my Hex of Shadows, which is a murder mystery series set in 1937. Will be out in a couple of months, so I'll give you a buzz.
Absolutely, and don't forget, if you make it out my way for this conference, so please keep in touch, and we'll get together.
Absolutely. Well, I look forward to it, Denny.
Thanks again, TJ.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
And thanks to TJ Glenn for being my guest tonight. Obviously, a very talented individual, and I certainly hope some of you will check out his websites and check out his books. And until the next time, thank you very much for listening. Denny Griffin, good night.